Thank you for joining Reading's International Earnings Call to discuss our 2016 full year and fourth quarter results. My name is Andrei Matyshynski. I'm Reading's Executive Vice President for Global Operations. With me are Ellen Cotter, our CEO, and Dev Ghosh, our EVP and Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin the substance of the call, I'll start by stating that in accordance with the Safe Harbor provision of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995, certain matters that will be addressed in this earnings call may constitute forward-looking statements. Such statements are subject to risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause our actual performance to be materially different from the performance indicated or implied by such statements. Such risk factors are clearly set out in our SEC filings. We undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements. In addition, we will discuss non-GAAP financial measures on this call. Reconciliations and definitions of non-GAAP financial measures, which are segment operating income and EBITDA, are included in our recently issued 2016 full year and fourth quarter earnings release on our company's website. Please note that our comments are necessarily summary in nature, and anything we say is qualified by the more detailed disclosure set forth in our 10K. So, with that behind us, Dev will be talking to us about the financial results for the 2016 full year and fourth quarter a little later. But first, I'll turn the call over to Ellen, who will update us on the company's operations.
Thanks, Andre, and thank you everyone for joining us today and sending in your questions. Like we've done in the past, we'll endeavor to cover as many questions as we can. Let me start by saying that 2016 was a terrific year for Reading on a variety of fronts. Our 2016 total revenues of $270 million were the highest on record for the company. Not only did the major studios deliver another record-setting slate of films in 2016, but also distributors of specialty film delivered some wonderful movies, like Moonlight, Manchester by the Sea, Lion, Elle, and La La Land. Our three cinema divisions in the United States, Australia, and New Zealand achieve record operational performance across various important metrics. Calculated in functional currency, each of these divisions set records for box office revenue, food and beverage revenue, total revenue, and theater-level cash flow. In the fourth quarter, we opened a new state-of-the-art theater in Hawaii, Olino by Consolidated Theaters. We commenced a CapEx plan in the U.S., and we completed renovations of three Australian and New Zealand theaters. Since the start of 2016, our board has approved five new theater deals with 34 screens in Australia and New Zealand. Each of these new builds will be branded Reading Cinemas, and most will feature a Titan Auditorium and or Gold Lounge or Premium Auditoriums. We took significant steps throughout the year to progress our Union Square project in New York City and New Market project in Brisbane. During 2016, we have been making progress on our Courtenay Central development in New Zealand. Unfortunately, a November 2016 earthquake stopped our current plans, which has allowed us the opportunity to rethink the entire project and potentially increase the amount of retail leasable space. The demolition and rebuilding of our parking structure will largely be covered by insurance. In addition to $57.5 million of construction financing for the Union Square project, we completed two other financing facilities. Plus, we renegotiated our Bank of America loan in the U.S. and our Westpac facility in New Zealand on more favorable terms. We acquired a new corporate headquarters building in Culver City, California. We completed the financing, renovated our office space, and we've moved in. We took many important steps towards improving our corporate governance, including implementing a new code of conduct, insider trading policy, and a new charter for our Audit and Conflicts Committee, and the first ever charter for our Compensation and Stock Options Committee. We overhauled our executive compensation structure and philosophy to better align ourselves with the interests of our stockholders. And finally, we upgraded our international tax provisioning system, thereby enhancing our overall internal controls. As you know, management delivered a three-year strategy to our board in February of this year. Our three-year strategy is a further extension of the business plan that I presented to our stockholders at our last two annual meetings and reiterated on what is now our fourth quarterly webcast. Reading creates long-term stockholder value through the opportunistic and synergistic development of our entertainment and real estate assets. The steady cash flow of our cinema circuit supports the strategic development of a strong property portfolio. We believe that our three-year business plan demonstrates that we have the financial wherewithal to execute on our previously announced strategies and value creation opportunities and still have the resources to implement in a fiscally responsible manner our recently announced $25 million stock repurchase program. Through our presentation today, Andre, Deb, and I will articulate the elements of our strategy and why we're confident in Reading's value creation opportunities. Turning to our cinema business, our consolidated full-year 2016 cinema revenues increased by 6% to $257 million, and our cinema segment operating income increased by 11% to $35.5 million. As I just mentioned, our 2016 cinema results set a number of company records. On a functional currency basis, among these were consolidated cinema revenues, total revenues, box office revenues, food and beverage revenues, gross margin, cash flow pre-occupancy, and theater-level cash flow. A couple of global comments about the overall cinema circuit. This year offered a very strong slate of commercial films from the major studios. Our top three grossing films were Finding Dory, a great family film, Deadpool, and Suicide Squad. In 2016, our Angelica New York generated the highest box office grosses out of any North American theater for Elle, Lion, and Moonlight, this year's Oscar winner for Best Picture. Our 2016 box office gross for Manchester by the Sea ranked the second highest in North America. Our New Zealand cinemas benefited due to the release of the movie The Hunt for the Wilder People, which is the highest grossing film of all time in New Zealand. Our Australian and New Zealand cinema results were very good, but our reported results were partially offset by minor unfavorable foreign currency movements. Lastly, 2016 includes the results of our refurbished and rebranded Angelica Film Center in San Diego, which opened in October of 2015, the refurbished Reading Cinema at Harbour Town in Queensland, Australia, which was completed in September of 2015, and the Reading Cinemas at Lynn Mall in Auckland, which opened in November of 2015. All of these theaters have now been open and active for a full year. Our favorable results this year reflect the implementation of our global cinema strategy that we've articulated to you over the last year and a half. I'll review a few of our 2016 strategic initiatives. As I mentioned earlier, in terms of our focus on creating uniquely designed venues, we opened our ninth theater in Hawaii on October 21st. The name of the theater is Olino, which means radiance or brilliance in the Hawaiian language. With respect to offering hospitality-styled comfort, we installed electric recliners in all eight auditoriums at Olino. We recently completed the installation of recliners in eight of the 16 auditoriums at our Victoria Ward Theater in Hawaii. So today, in the U.S., four of our theaters, or 31 auditoriums, feature recliner seating. Looking ahead, by the end of 2019, we hope to install electric luxury recliners in about 90 additional auditoriums in the U.S. With respect to Australia and New Zealand, in August 2016, we completed theater renovations at our Chernside and Epping cinemas in Australia, which included adding two recliner premium auditoriums at each theater. Today, in Australia and New Zealand, we have 12 theaters or 30 auditoriums with electric recliners, and by the end of 2019, we intend to install electric luxury recliners in 16 additional auditoriums. Presentation is paramount to our strategy of delivering best-in-class cinematic experiences to our guests that encourage return visits. To that end, we deliver state-of-the-art presentation through our branded premium auditorium, Titan XC, or IMAX at select theaters. In the fourth quarter of 2016, we added the Titan Lux experience at the Victoria Ward and Alino Theaters. Titan Lux is a Titan XC auditorium with luxury electric recliners. This branded auditorium seems to be the first choice among our guests at both Alino and Ward. We also added a Titan XC at Churnside in Victoria, Australia. By the end of 2019, our plans are to add 8 more Titan auditoriums in the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. I'm pleased to report that our first IMAX in the circuit at Valley Plaza in Bakersfield continues to perform well. Box office revenues at this theater has increased by over 16%, which is the highest percentage increase within our U.S. commercial theater portfolio. We'll continue to evaluate cinemas in the U.S. for IMAX installations. We've found that the physical space requirement coupled with higher economic terms do present challenges, though, to additional IMAX installations. We've continued to elevate the food and beverage program in our theaters, especially in the U.S. Our results for 2016 demonstrated our successful execution of this program. Our 2016 food and beverage per cap for our U.S. cinemas was a record $4.49. Our U.S. food and beverage revenues were up 8.8% over last year. For the fourth quarter, our U.S. food and beverage per cap was $4.59, which represented an 8.2% increase versus the same period last year. At Alino, our freshly prepared, locally inspired menu is generating food and beverage per caps regularly over $7.75. At the Victoria Ward Theater, our 2016 food and beverage per cap of $5.32 increased by 17% versus the same period last year. During 2016, our team obtained 5 new liquor licenses. We've begun serving spirits, beer, and wine, and an elevated food and beverage menu at 3 of these locations so far. To date, we have 9 cinema liquor licenses operational in the United States. In the first quarter of 2017, we were also granted a liquor license at our Reading Cinema in Murrieta, California. Due to healthy increases in attendance, the food and beverage revenue for our Australian circuit increased 7.5% over last year and increased 8% for the fourth quarter. Due to the opening of the new Lynn Theater, the New Zealand food and beverage revenues increased 31.1% over last year and were up by 5.4% for the fourth quarter. Over the next year, our team in Australia and New Zealand is performing a top-to-bottom review of its food and beverage program with a view to further increasing revenues and per caps. Another initiative is to build a stronger revenue and income stream from the sale of movie tickets from our own websites. In Australia and New Zealand, where we've been selling our own tickets for years, we experienced a 33% increase in the number of tickets sold from our websites in 2016. In the U.S., where we started selling our own tickets earlier in 2016, we're also very encouraged by the increasing number of tickets sold. By the end of fourth quarter 2017, we'll be launching cinema apps for each of our 4 cinema brands across all 3 countries that will further improve the sale of our own tickets. Also, we've been working on the ability to sell our F&B menus on our websites and apps. By the end of 2017, we'll be selling some portion of our menu in this fashion to further improve the overall guest experience. Turning to our 2016 CapEx program in the United States, as I mentioned previously, we opened Alino in Hawaii and completed part of the overall renovation of the Victoria Ward in Hawaii. In New York, we made some auditorium and F&B upgrades to the Angelica. By the end of 2017, we intend to complete top-to-bottom commercial theater renovations in the U.S. at our cinemas in Murrieta, California, and Manville, New Jersey. and complete the second stage of our renovation at the Victoria Ward. The components of these renovations include installation of recliner seating, addition of Titan screens, modifications to accommodate an elevated food and beverage menu, and lobby design changes. Based on our three-year strategy, by the end of 2019, we intend to have completed renovations in 9 more theaters in the United States. Today, we're working on the conversion of one of our Reading cinemas to an Angelika Film Center and hope to have this conversion completed during 2018. With respect to Australia and New Zealand, we completed renovations of 2 of our theaters in Victoria, Epping and Chirnside Park, and completed a renovation of the Palms Theater in New Zealand. Important elements of these renovations have been mentioned earlier. By the end of 2017, we intend to renovate 2 additional Reading cinemas in Australia. By the end of 2019, we intend to renovate 8 more theaters across Australia and New Zealand. Our management team continues to pursue new growth opportunities. In Australia and New Zealand, we are working to expand the Reading Cinema brand based on the model recently established at our new theater in Auckland in the New Lynn suburbs. In the United States, we're aiming to expand the Angelika brand based on a model similar to Carmel Mountain. With respect to Australia and New Zealand, as I mentioned earlier, since the start of 2016, our board has approved 5 new theater deals with 34 auditoriums. Each of these new builds will be branded Reading Cinemas, and most will feature a Titan Auditorium and or Gold Lounge or Premium Auditoriums. Our 8-screen state-of-the-art Reading Cinema at Newmarket Village is scheduled to open during the fourth quarter of 2017. The other 4 theaters will open during 2019 and 2020. Now I'll turn to our real estate business. Our 2016 consolidated real estate revenues decreased by 3% to $20.9 million. But our real estate segment operating income increased by 2% to $6.9 million. In 2015, our property income was burdened by $2.2 million in legal fees incurred that year in connection with our endeavors to prevent the producers of Stomp from leaving our Orpheum Theater in New York City. As you know, the arbitrator ruled in our favor, and Stomp continues to play at the Orpheum. Among the remedies awarded to Reading was the reimbursement of $2.3 million in legal fees. In 2016, we entered into a payment agreement with the Stomp producers and a revised license agreement, which we believe will allow the show to continue its successful run at the Orpheum. In 2016, we collected $415,000, which was recorded as a recovery against legal expense allocated to this segment. Also, 2015 included revenues and income from our Union Square Live Theater and third-party tenants. In 2016, the property was vacated for redevelopment, thereby eliminating the revenue and income. Additionally, 2016 reflects increased revenue and income mainly attributable to Arcanum Park, ETC, and Queensland, which was acquired at the end of December 2015. Now I'll touch on our value creation projects. Turning first to our New York City projects. Our Union Square, our 44 Union Square project, continues to progress. At the end of December 2016, we closed a $57.5 million construction financing with Bank of the Ozarks as senior lender and Fisher Brothers as mezzanine lender, and have recently progressed from an early start agreement to a guaranteed maximum price construction agreement with contractor CNY. We just recently signed our construction management agreement with CNY. Today, the site has been prepared for construction. We have a sidewalk bridge up and construction fencing installed. Bracing is underway to hold up the landmarked exterior walls so structural demolition can begin. During 2017, we expect to complete structural demolition, exterior historic facade work, excavation of the basement and foundation work, concrete superstructure work, And most importantly, by the end of 2017, we expect to start construction of the iconic glass dome that will become the identifier of this trophy property. Today in Germany, our contractor, Permastalisa, is testing the glass dome construction. The iconic glass dome will be one of the first of its kind in New York City. Many of you asked us about the leasing of the building. The Union Square retail market continues to be one of the most vibrant and active markets in New York. Because of the incredible density from the office population, residents, students, restaurant customers, and tourists. Anchors like Whole Foods, ABC Carpet and Home, Paragon Sports, and Babies R Us draw a diverse customer on a daily basis and attract other retailers to the area. Types of retailers that are looking at Union Square now include hard goods, entertainment, gourmet food, home furnishings, and recently, online retailers looking for a brick-and-mortar presence. Certain recognizable brand-name potential tenants are currently considering leasing the entire building. The one-of-a-kind flagship nature of 44 Union Square has also attracted retailers who can utilize the upstairs for their offices and showrooms. The IC conference in this May in Las Vegas will be yet another opportunity for us to sit down with some of the large chains who are not in New York City and show them the latest developments with regard to the construction. Office leasing typically gets into full swing when the potential space is closer to being finished so that a potential tenant can actually see and feel their office space. Also, office tenants typically have a shorter timeline to occupancy than major retail tenants. Though we're months away from that happening, we've had a number of potential office tenants go through the building. Today, most interest in the office floors has been from tech companies who want the energy of Union Square coupled with its incredible transportation access. We're advised that the office traction will pick up when the floors are poured and the dome is being installed, and then people can get something closer to the full experience. The design of the 44 Union Square building just received global recognition with its selection as a finalist in the unbuilt commercial category of the 5th annual Architizer A-plus Awards, a program celebrating the best in global architecture. We're still targeting to hand over retail space to tenants during the second quarter of 2018. We also received several questions about the redevelopment of the Cinema 1, 2, and 3. In the fourth quarter of 2016, together with our neighbors at 60th and 3rd Avenue, we jointly completed an appraisal for a combined property. This appraisal is intended to help the parties complete the economic terms of a deal. Our three-year plan includes the various development steps required to carry out a full redevelopment of the site. In 2017, we've earmarked a sizable sum for pre-development funds to spend on entitlements, planning, and design issues. There are three key stakeholders in this New York City development: Reading, as a 75% owner, Sutton Hill Capital LLC, Reading's 25% partner, and our neighbors at 60th and 3rd Avenue. Today, we believe that each of these stakeholders understand the potential increased value in a combined site and are committed to carrying out a thoughtfully planned redevelopment. Our valuation work shows that a combination of our property with that of our neighbors will result in significant synergies. We do not anticipate that a redeveloped site will be completed before 2019. In terms of Reading's New York City development schedule, as the Union Square project stabilizes and provides the company with greater leverage, we believe that our Cinema 1, 2, and 3 construction project will likely enjoy greater and more efficient financing options. Turning now to our value creation projects in Australia and New Zealand. Regarding Newmarket in Brisbane, in 2016, our board approved the budget to build a state-of-the-art Reading Cinema, about 10,000 square feet of incremental food and beverage retail, extra parking, and upgrade our common areas. In late September 2016, our construction contractor commenced early work on the site. By the end of 2016, demolition of two buildings had been completed. Today, we're progressing with the construction of the theater and the ancillary retail, and we're on schedule to open by the end of 2017. Our marketing team in Australia recently rebranded the center New Market Village and implemented a more robust marketing strategy for our existing tenants. To lease the new F&B retail, we appointed Jones Lang LaSalle as exclusive broker, who indicated that the retail leasing interest has been strong to date. Our 16 to 20 Edmundston office building, acquired in November of 2015, is now fully leased under leases that allow us flexibility to demolish the building to integrate the property into our shopping center. The several hundred office employees in this building are supporting the businesses of our New Market Village tenants as we hold this property for ultimate redevelopment as an integrated part of our New Market Village. At Redyard in Auburn, in 2016, we delivered on our commitment to add incremental retail to the site. We completed construction on three new tenancies, two of which are now open and trading. The third in the group should be open shortly. Additionally, we're in the process of constructing two additional dining tenancies, Red Rooster and Oporto, on two restaurant pad sites in the parking lot. Both restaurants are targeting a 2017 opening. Turning to Courtenay Central in Wellington. As we reported, an earthquake in November of 2016 led to the determination that our Torrey Street car park needed to be demolished. This was an unfortunate event for everyone as we've been making good progress on our redevelopment efforts. We believe that the demolition of the existing nine-story parking garage will open the way for additional retail space and a better integration of our center around a new parking structure. Today, we anticipate that the demolition of the parking garage will be completed by the end of March 2017. The retail portion of our entertainment theme center, including our Reading Cinema, which was not structurally damaged, will also reopen to the public by the end of March 2017. The demolition of the garage has provided us with the opportunity to rethink the entire Courtenay Central project. We'll be taking advantage of this opportunity. We're in the process of working with the City of Wellington and our retail partners, including Countdown Supermarket, to determine whether there are ways we can further improve the overall project. We're exploring, as I said, the possibilities of adding additional incremental retail and/or entertainment uses to the project. We hope to be able to report back on a new and improved master plan within the next two calendar quarters. In the interim, our team in New Zealand is working on a pop-up dining concept to populate the existing food court to keep our space active and interesting during this further period of transition. At the end of 2016, we received an advance payment related to the earthquake damage of $5 million from our insurance company to fund ongoing costs. We filed an insurance claim to recover the impairment loss on the parking structure and the ancillary demolition costs. The $1.4 million casualty loss relates to the 5% deductible portion calculated based on the estimated value of the insured parking structure and the portion of the demolition costs that may not be recoverable under our insurance policy. In the fourth quarter of 2016, the zoning of our 64-acre site in Manukau, New Zealand, was changed from agricultural to active light industrial zoning. The adjoining 6.4-acre site, which provides an entrance to our bigger site off an existing commercial road, was already zoned for heavy industrial use. This zoning change has substantially increased the value of our Manukau assets. With the zoning milestone achieved and behind us, in 2017, we'll be evaluating all of our various options, including sale and development options. And we're committed to maximizing the value of this asset for our stockholders, rather than just rushing it to market. Overall, we are very pleased with the results of this year and the progress we're making on our strategic plan. We believe we remain well-positioned to drive long-term value for all Reading stockholders. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dev for a financial review of 2016 and the fourth quarter.
Thank you, Ellen. Now I'll discuss the financial results for 2016's full year and the fourth quarter. We are pleased to report that revenues for this year represent our highest operating revenue in the company's history. The fourth quarter operating revenue was also the highest fourth quarter in the company's history. Consolidated revenues for the fourth quarter of 2016 and for the year ended December 31, 2016, increased by 1% and 5% respectively to $67.5 million and $270 million respectively. Net income decreased by $3.2 million to $0.4 million for the fourth quarter of 2016. Consequently, earnings per share decreased by 13 cents as a result of 1. Higher general and administrative expenses, and secondly, casualty loss relating to the earthquake damage in Wellington, New Zealand that Ellen discussed. For the year ended December 31, 2016, our net income decreased by 59%, or $13.7 million, due to significantly higher realized gain on the sale of certain properties, primarily our Mooney Ponds property in Australia and the sale of our Doheny condo in Los Angeles, both of which occurred in 2015, not replicated in 2016, higher general and administrative expenses. We will discuss the drivers of the G&A increase in further detail a little later. These decreases in net income were offset by higher 2016 operating performance. Our lower interest expense for the quarter and for the year ended December 31, 2016 was mainly due to the reduction in interest rates as a result of our renegotiation of loan arrangements in Australia and from more dynamic cash management. Our non-segment general and administrative expenses for the quarter were higher by $2.7 million to $7 million. This increase is primarily attributable to the $2.4 million increase in legal fees not covered by our D&O insurance. Non-segment general and administrative expenses for the year ended December 31, 2016, increased by $6.8 million compared to a year ago. The increase is primarily due to 1. Higher legal expenses of $3.2 million, release of over-accruals in prior year bonus accruals during 2015, which resulted in lower general and administrative expenses in that year of $1.6 million. 3. Additional expenses incurred in connection with the prior year's tax matters that we worked on for the 2015 year-end audit of $960,000, and expenses incurred in connection with the change in status of certain executives, $400,000, and finally, higher compensation expense related to equity-based performance awards as a result of the introduction of restricted stock units of $409,000. Ongoing expenses associated with upgrading our corporate governance, the defense of the derivative litigation, employment arbitration, higher compensation expense related to the introduction of restricted stock units as equity-based performance awards, and non-recurring expenses incurred in the status of certain executives, and the additional accounting and consulting expenses in connection with the 2015 year-end audit that I discussed earlier drove the higher G&A expense. Much of this recent G&A expense increase has resulted from factors beyond our control. That said, we want to assure our investors and stakeholders that cost control is very important to us, and we remain intently focused on cost management and optimization. We believe that many of these items, for example, expenses related to the 2015 audit, will be non-recurring. We remain focused on reducing expenses to prior year levels. Note that litigation costs related to the derivative litigation was largely out of our control, as our directors are simply responding to claims brought by Mr. Carter Jr. and do not have the ability to bring to an end to such litigation short of a trial on the merits. No assurances can be given that this litigation will be resolved in the near term. Shifting to cash flows, our net cash provided by operations for the year ended December 31st, 2016, was $30.2 million, which is a $1.6 million increase from the same period in 2015. Our cash flows from operations has ranged from $25 to $29 million per year for the past 4 years before increasing over $30 million this year. In regards to investing activities, we used almost $43 million in cash in property acquisitions and enhancements for the year, which we believe will add value in future periods. $11.2 million of this is attributable to the purchase of our new corporate headquarters in Culver City. We occupy approximately half of the building. Once the rest of the building is leased, it is anticipated that this move will reduce our occupancy expenses. The remainder of the capital expenditures relates primarily to the fit-out and opening of Olino, enhancements to our existing cinemas, and to our various value creation projects in process, notably the Union Square redevelopment project and the expansion projects for Newmarket and Courtney Centers. The cinema projects are consistent with the strategic priorities Ellen mentioned earlier on investing in delivering best-in-class cinematic experiences to our guests. We believe, and as the results this year demonstrate, that we will be able to earn higher returns as a result of improving our cinema's amenities. For the past year, we repaid borrowings of $63.7 million and had additional new borrowings of $81.6 million. Turning now to our financial position, our total assets increased by $33.6 million, or 9%, primarily driven by an increase in our properties due to the acquisition of the new Culver City corporate headquarters, capitalization of costs related to the redevelopment of our Union Square property in New York, capital expenditures relating to the opening of the Olino Theater in Hawaii, and capital enhancements in our existing cinema locations. Our cash and cash equivalents decreased by $700,000. We manage our cash investments and capital structure so that we are able to meet short-term and long-term obligations for our business while maintaining financial flexibility and liquidity. Our liquidity position remains strong with $19 million of cash on our balance sheet at December 31, 2016, and approximately $118 million of additional capacity under our credit arrangements in the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand, with 56 of that $118 million being unrestricted capacity. We've been very busy on the Treasury front and have made several changes in our borrowing arrangements, which include: on March 3, 2016, we amended our $55 million credit facility with Bank of America to permit real estate acquisition loans. In August 2016, we completed the refinancing of our Cinema 123 loan from a $15 million loan with Santander Bank that was scheduled to mature in October 2016 with a three-year $20 million loan from Valley National Bank. In October 2016, we amended our $5 million credit line with Bank of America to provide a two-year extension for the maturity to October 31st, 2019. Also in October 2016, we amended our Westpac credit facility in New Zealand to increase the construction funding line from $15 million New Zealand dollars to $18 million New Zealand dollars. On December 13, 2016, we replaced the funding that we used to purchase our new U.S. corporate headquarters with a new 10-year $8.4 million mortgage loan from Citizens Bank. On December 29, 2016, we closed a new construction finance facility for Union Square that totaled $57.2 $5 million. This will fund the non-equity portion of the anticipated construction costs of the redevelopment of that property. The combined facilities consist of $50 million of aggregate loans from Bank of the Ozarks and a $7.5 million mezzanine loan from Tammany Mez Investor LLC, an affiliate of Fisher Brothers. We are working now on the renewal of our Westpac line of credit and our Minetta Square loan, both of which will become current during 2017. As of December 31, 2016, we have debt outstanding of $149 million and our debt-to-EBITDA ratio was 4.1 times. Note, however, that we've excluded debt allocable to projects under construction. Our debt-to-EBITDA would be closer to the mid-3 range. Lastly, we expect to receive about $44 million from the sale of our Burwood property in Melbourne, Australia, on or before the end of 2017. Of this $44 million amount, we are slated to receive about $16 million before the end of the second quarter of 2017. Both these amounts are stated in U.S. dollars. And with that, I'll turn the call over to Andre.
Thanks, Dev. First, I'd like to thank all our investors who forwarded questions to our investor relations emails. We were very pleased with the number of inquiries we received, and we've compiled a set of questions and answers that represent the most common questions and recurring themes that were emailed to us. So the first question we'll put to Dev: what additional proactive steps will the company take to attract both sell-side analysts and buy-side investors to the company? What are the next investment conferences Reading plans to present at?
Thanks, Andre. In 2016, we made great strides in our engagement with the investment community and educating investors about the company, its assets, and the value creation potential of our three-year strategy. Last year, we presented at the Gabelli Conference in New York, and we participated in two additional B. Riley investor conferences. In September 2016, Eric Wald, media analyst at B. Riley, launched coverage of Reading with the first ever analyst report on the company. We continue to encourage and work with other sell-side analysts to initiate coverage of our company. Starting with the fourth quarter of 2016, we commenced earnings conference calls that are webcast with prepared remarks and Q&A with investors and analysts. This is our fourth such webcast, and we've heard that these calls have been helpful to folks interested in the company. In 2017, we plan to attend again the Gabelli Media Conference in New York and the B. Riley conferences, and are looking at other conferences that would make sense for the company. We engaged in our first ever non-deal roadshow last December and are considering that again this year as well. We're also participating in a presentation at this year's CinemaCon hosted by Barrington Associates, another firm of investment analysts. And lastly, we continue to communicate our value proposition to the market and look forward to keeping stockholders updated on our progress.
Thanks, Dev. I'll direct the next question to myself. Can you provide some background on the recently announced $25 million stock repurchase program? The $25 million stock repurchase program is designed to allow opportunistic stock repurchases while maintaining ample liquidity to drive the growth contemplated by our current business strategy, including strategic investments in our cinemas and real estate development projects. The company recently announced its third stock repurchase program authorized by our board. We completed our second repurchase program, $10 million, during the fourth quarter of 2016. During the fourth quarter of 2016, we bought in 181,739 shares at an average price per share of $15.64. in March of this year, following a review and approval of our three-year business strategy, our board gave management approval for another tranche, this time for $25 million, which underscores the confidence we have in our business strategy, our financial performance, and our prospects for 2017 and beyond. Management has discretion to facilitate this repurchase and will entertain both open market purchases within SEC criteria and block repurchases, giving fair consideration to the size and price of the block. Our third question, we received a number of questions regarding this indication of interest we received from Patent Vision LLC regarding its interest in all the shares of Reading for $18.50 per share acquisition. Ellen, perhaps you could address this.
Thanks, Andre. The Board of Directors of Reading, all of whom are stockholders and some of whom are significant stockholders, have reviewed each of the three indications of interest from Patent Vision. Each time, the Board fully reviewed Mr. Hest's correspondence and thoroughly considered a presentation on management strategy. The Board determined in each instance that it was in the best interest of the company and its stockholders to remain independent and not pursue a sales strategy at that time. The law in Nevada is clear that the time frame of the execution of the business strategy of a Nevada company is within the purview of the Board of Directors. Many of you invested in the company because of its long-term asset growth potential. That message to our stockholders has not varied over the years. Over the last 2 years, we have delivered record operational performance and have made meaningful progress on our value creation projects. Our three-year strategy details the potential for further long-term value creation for Reading. The Board endorses this strategy and believes it will continue to drive enhanced value for stockholders.
Thanks, Ellen. Dev, what were the results of the 2016 audit?
Thanks, Andre. This year, I'm happy to report that our auditors gave us a clean opinion on our results and internal controls. We are continuing to enhance and strengthen our financial controls, including those over international tax provisioning.
Well, while you're on the roll, Dev, why did you change your accounting policy to commence recognizing breakage income on your sales of gift cards and gift certificates in the U.S.?
So prior to 2014, we recognized revenue for our gift cards and gift certificates issued in the U.S., which don't expire and don't have dormancy fees, only when they were redeemed. At the end of the fourth quarter of 2016, we determined that we had sufficient historical information to recognize breakage income on them based on our review of our own historical redemption patterns using company-wide data accumulated over many years. We considered it preferable to estimate a certain percentage of our gift card and gift certificate sales to be recorded as breakage income, as it better reflects the historical redemption patterns and our earnings potential. As a result of this change, breakage revenues recognized were $618,000, $542,000, and $494,000 for the years ended December 31st, 2016, 15, and 14.
Thanks, Dev. Our sixth question will go to Ellen. Can you provide an update on the litigation and when you expect these matters to be resolved? When will legal expenses decrease?
As you know, we don't comment on pending litigation and refer you to our Form 10-K for all relevant information pertaining to these matters. At the present time, our only major litigation is the derivative suit filed by James Cotter Jr., and our only major arbitration is the employment arbitration involving Jim Cotter Jr. We're currently self-funding the defense of these cases as our D&O insurance has been exhausted, and we remain legally obligated to pay for the defense of our director defendants.
Okay, the last question. Is there an update on James Cotter Jr.'s filing of an ex parte application for the appointment of a trustee ad litem and of a guardian ad litem for the benefit of Cotter Sr.'s minor grandchildren to evaluate the indication of interest sent by Pattern Vision. I'll field this one. Reading International is not a party to that litigation. However, management is advised that Pattern Vision has delivered an indication of interest to the trustees and executives of James Cotter Sr.'s trust and estate to purchase the Reading shares owned by the estate and trust that essentially mirrors the indication of interest it sent to the company. James A. Cotter Jr. sought the appointment of a trustee ad litem to potentially negotiate a sale of the Reading common stock held by the trust and the guardian ad litem for the grandchildren of Mr. Cotter Sr., who will be the ultimate beneficiaries of the voting common stock held by the estate and the trust. The Superior Court in California did appoint a guardian ad litem. The court, however, declined to appoint a trustee ad litem, but instead appointed a Section 730 expert to assist it in evaluating the Pattern Vision indication of interest to the trust and making recommendations as to the next steps, if any. The court limited the charges and the reimbursable costs of such 730 expert to $25,000. It is anticipated that the Section 730 expert will report back to the court by April 4th of this year. Reading's board continues to be of the belief that it would not be in the best interests of our company or our stockholders to sell our company at this time. As our management works to effectuate our three-year business strategy and to complete, among other things, the redevelopment of our Union Square, Cinemas 1, 2, and 3, Newmarket, Auburn, and Courtenay Central properties. I refer you to our recently filed 10-K for all the relevant information that the company can disclose about that matter. With this last question, I'll wrap up the call. As always, Dev, Ellen, and I are available to answer questions you may have going forward. We appreciate you listening to the call today and look forward to keeping you updated on our performance on future earnings calls and through our ongoing communications. Thank you.